Hello. Ginger and Kate are here too. They're just off camera. So I wanted to share something today that I've been thinking about for a couple of months. I put a link in the chat bar, which you don't need to read, but it's there if you want it. It's an article I read a couple of months ago. It was an interview with Tim Keller in The Atlantic. So The Atlantic is like a very, you know, very old, over 100 years old publication. It's very secular, very intellectual. And it was what I thought was a pretty fair interview with him. And the person interviewing him asked him what's basically the ultimate question and a fair question to Christians. She asks him, you'll have to, I'm looking in a lot of windows here. She asks Tim Keller to explain why an all good, all loving, all powerful God allows for the existence of evil and suffering in the world. And Tim Keller gives the answer that if you ever watch any like apologetics or any debates or whatever, you've probably heard all these arguments before. Tim Keller says, he says a couple of things. He says, the wrong answer, especially for a person who's suffering or in grief, is the wrong answer is don't question God has his reasons. That's not the answer to it. And he goes on to talk about the book of Job and how the book of Job goes on for 40 chapters and God meets Job at the end and vindicates him. And Tim Keller says, this is no call to stoicism or to not question. Job is a book showing that God is patient with us in suffering and always present even when he seems absent. So when dealing with someone who is suffering, you start with Christ's suffering, his walking with us in the furnace, his giving his love and presence, though not all the answers. He even says there that the book of Job doesn't give all, that God doesn't give us all the answers. And then he goes on to further talk about some of like the, he says, if you're talking about someone who's not suffering but wants to disprove God on the basis of this, and then he goes on to talk about the more philosophical, debate-oriented answers to that question, and I'm not going to get into that except to say that the more into that you get, the farther and farther you get from being any help to anyone who's really suffering. You get farther and farther away from the real issue of why do things happen that seem so objectionable in a world where God is supposed to care and supposed to be loving and supposed to be in control. So that's what I want to talk about. And when I read this article, what I took away from it was Tim Keller really doesn't have, he can't satisfy the questioner, to that question. And if Tim Keller can't, I don't really know who can. And I thought a lot about how questions that aren't answerable, or how God answers these. Bob told me to keep it to 10 or 15 minutes. I'm going to try. So is the answer to suffering in Job? I would say it is and it isn't. Sometimes we'll hear people say things like, God is in control. And that's meant to be a comfort. And I guess if there's something like you've lost your job or something that you really hoped would happen doesn't happen, and you can rest on the idea that God is in control, that there's another way that this can work itself out. But I would say that God is in control is not always a comfort. And sometimes the idea that God is in control is actually very distressing. The idea that God is in control when a tsunami kills 500,000 people is not really very comforting. The idea that God is in control, you know, if you just read history, what the Japanese did in China, what the Soviets did in Germany in World War II, the idea that God is in control of these things, it's not just not a comfort. It's actually very, it can drive someone away and think that God is maybe cruel, or any number of other things. So one thing I want to talk about with regard to that is the idea that I think we always have to remember that this world as it is not as God would want it. We learn that from Genesis 3. We learn about Adam and Eve in the garden and the choice that they made, that they were given dominion over the garden, and that was the setup that God wanted. He wanted fellowship with them, and that he created this environment for them, and they were to be stewards of it, and there was an arrangement set up, and they broke that arrangement. And then he sent them out of the garden. He sent them out of his presence, and he sent them out of the environment that he specifically prepared for them. He set a cherubim at the gate with a flaming sword that pointed in all directions to block the way. That's a whole sermon unto itself, but I'll just say about that, that what that signifies is that he set up that there would be judgment, the fire and the sword. There's judgment on corrupt earthly things, on fallen Adam. There's a judgment that is required for Adam to come back to the environment that God wants him in. So we're in a place that is not set right the way that God would want it. If you look in Hebrews 2, Hebrews chapter 2, verse 8, the author starts by quoting David. He's quoting David from the Psalms. We can even go back to verse 7. What is mankind that you are mindful of him? A son of man that you care for him? You made them lower, a little lower than the angels, and crowned them with glory and honor. He's talking about people, human beings. Crowned them with glory and honor and put everything under their feet. And then the author of Hebrews says, in putting everything under them, God left nothing that is not subject to them. Yet, at the present, we do not see everything subject to them. We do not see in the world that everything is put under the control of people. There's a lot of things that are out of our control. We live in a world of sin. Sometimes we feel like we can't even control ourselves. So that is something that God is not completely controlling and setting the way he wants it. There's sin in our lives and in the world. Romans chapter 8, verse 18. It says, I consider the sufferings of this present time, they're not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. That sounds great. The sufferings and now it's going to be nothing compared to what's coming. And then it says, for the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. In other words, there's something that God has planned and something that God wants that is being waited on. It's not yet here. The creation eagerly awaits for that to be revealed. So the world is fractured, and we inevitably face crises that can cast doubt on God's goodness and his power to save us. The point I want to make is the world is not as God would have it set perfectly right, and that he's in the process of redeeming it through his son. Now back to Job. Does God answer Job? We know God answers Job. Does God answer Job in a way that satisfies us? Does God comfort Job? I'm going to read from Stephen Kong. He wrote a book, The Splendor of His Ways. I don't even know. I got the window in the way. This one. I want to just read something he wrote about what Job is about and what Job reveals. It says, please realize, he's talking about the process of soul searching, of searching your soul, of being in a time of trial and travail, and the soul searching that comes from that. He says, Stephen Kong writes in this book, please realize this process of soul searching is necessary to affect the final deliverance. As you go through a spiritual crisis, inevitably there will be these searchings in your soul. Yet it is not altogether unprofitable, for it reveals to you, as nothing else could, the utter incompetency of the soul to resolve a spiritual problem. Or I'm going to say an ultimate problem. We talk about these problems that can cast doubt on the goodness of God. These problems where we feel like you can't really see a good solution, and you're just tired, and you can't see the good in it. These ultimate problems. After such a long period of searching, we arrive at nothing. And you finally must admit that your feelings can never lead you out of the crisis. Your thoughts can never search out the mind of God. Your will and desire are not able to bow and to bend under the hand of the Lord. Far from resolving your trial, such soul searching actually can aggravate it. Such an experience makes very obvious the fact that if ever there is to be a solution, that solution will have to come not from you, but from somewhere else. The searching of the soul does not have the answer. A good part of the book of Job, if you know it, is taken up by his friends trying to explain to him what is happening to him. Because they're trying to give him comfort, or they're trying to give him some kind of peace or some kind of understanding of why what's happening is happening. And at the end of the book, God says about these men and their explanations, it says that they've aroused his wrath and that they've darkened his counsel. These men have darkened God's counsel by their words that are spoken without knowledge. So a lot of the point I want to make is a lot of what we can try to do as Christians when people are in a trial or suffering, we can try to like find a verse for them or find a Bible story that applies and try to tell it to them and talk at them and send words at them. And we have to be very careful that we're not darkening God's counsel with words without knowledge. I'm sure I've done that. So if these men are darkening God's counsel with what they're saying, what is God's counsel? How does God answer Job? Is the end of Job comforting? Try reading the last five chapters of Job to someone who's really suffering, and see if it makes them feel better. I would argue that it probably wouldn't. So what is the lesson? Another verse. You know, there's the verse in Philippians chapter 4 that talks about the peace that surpasses all understanding, that we can petition to God and receive the peace that passes all understanding. The problem with the peace that passes all and surpasses all understanding is that it surpasses all understanding. We can often find that we have it, but we don't know how we have it, or we want it, but we don't know how to get it. We don't know what the peace is on. We can't tell you in words what the peace is on. So that, you know, that can be cold comfort to someone who is really suffering. So what I wanted to say regarding what Stephen Kong is saying, that often our feelings and our mind, our soul, that is, can't really lead us out of the problem we're in. And I think that the lesson of Job to me at the end of Job is that there is a limit to words and lessons and theology. And beyond that limit, God answers through revelation. That what Job gets in the last five chapters of the book is not really a lesson. It's a revelation of God. God reveals himself. And revelation I would define as learning something or seeing something that you can't even put into words. It can't be put into words, but it's something that gives you a better picture of God and of yourself, and it casts everything that's going on in a new light. It casts things in a new light. If you remember, the life of Paul the Apostle, of Saul of Tarsus, was completely changed, not through a lesson, not through preaching, but through revelation. God showed up. Jacob received a significant revelation of God in the man that he wrestled all night at the brook. It wasn't a sermon given to him. It wasn't somebody, like, for an example, if you remember when David sinned with Bathsheba and Uriah the Hittite, he did receive a word, remember, from the prophet, I believe Nathan, who told him, he basically got a word, you know, he got teaching, and it set him straight. But there's a point beyond which those things will work. There's a point where God shows up, and God, there's a confrontation that takes place. And again, the life of Paul and the life of Jacob, and there's probably a lot of other examples where God doesn't dispense a teaching, but he simply reveals himself. There's revelation, and we have to see that this is part of the way God works, and that there is a time and a place where we have to be careful what we say. We have to maybe not say things. What we can do is we can pray, obviously, pray for revelation, pray that God will cast things in a new light to people, pray that God can change a situation in the way that we could never imagine. And also there's a material help that we can give to people in need that is an expression of love that's often not you know, heady and theological, but just helping somebody and just expressing love through meeting a material need. So that's what I have. Just the importance of always factoring in that God answers ultimate questions often through revelation of himself. And that's something that we can't really explain, or we can't explain how it works or why it works. But I believe that that in Job is specifically about the darkest, hardest, most difficult thing someone could imagine going through. And God is saying that that even in this, the words and explanations and theology fail to meet the needs of people in these types of situations. And that God meets those needs through revelation. And maybe that's bad news in a way, because it's completely out of our control to be able to do something like that. It's only God that can do it. So we feel like we want to change things. We want to make things better, but we can't. But I believe God can, and he does it in his own time. And that can be a hard word, but if we believe that he's good and we believe he really has that kind of power, then we're glad that the person with the ultimate power is the one whose job it is to do it. So I'll just stop there.